Hello, all, from the studios of KXCI Community Radio in Tucson, Arizona. I'm King David McKenzie with the truth. Here's how some of the world is treating itself today. The U.S. media have been given access to the return home of a dead U.S. soldier for the first time since an 18-year ban on coverage was lifted by the Obama administration. Reporters were allowed to witness the ceremony marking the return to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware of the body of Air Force Staff Sergeant Philip Myers of Hopeville, Virginia, with the permission of his family. Sergeant Myers was killed by an IED in Afghanistan Saturday. The media ban was first put in place by George H.W. Bush during the 1991 Gulf War as an attempt to disguise the human cost of the war from public opinion. A small Japanese study suggests that consuming 2.5 ounces of broccoli sprouts per day may help guard against H. pylori, a bacterium that is tied to ulcers, gastritis, and stomach cancer. Oh, too bad I'm allergic to the stuff. Traces of a chemical used in rocket fuel were found in samples of powdered baby formula and could exceed what's considered a safe dose for adults if mixed with water also contaminated with the ingredient, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Their scientists looked for the chemical perchlorate in different brands of powdered baby formula. The scientists' report was published last month, but the Environmental Working Group issued a press release on Thursday of last week drawing attention to it. The chemical has turned up in several cities' drinking water supplies. It can occur naturally, but most perchlorate contamination has been tied to defense and aerospace sites. Significant amounts of perchlorate can affect thyroid function. The thyroid helps set the body's metabolism. Thyroid problems can impact fetal and infant brain development as well. One from the inbox. Now that the corporate myth of clean coal has been permanently laid to rest with the coal ash containment disaster in eastern Tennessee, a new corporate myth of clean nuclear is being rushed on stage to replace it as the clean energy hope of tomorrow. But new studies of the Three Mile Island disaster 30 years ago are questioning whether nuclear power plants can ever be built to be safe. Does anybody remember conservation? End of quote. Looks like the Great White Father may have stuck it to the Navajo Nation again. The Supreme Court has ruled against the Navajo Nation for a second time in its battle with the federal government over whether the tribe should have gotten more money for coal on its land. The High Court, in a unanimous opinion this morning, reversed a decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit that said that the federal government failed to uphold its trust duties to the Navajo Nation and that the tribe is entitled to damages from the government. The tribe has alleged that Peabody Energy conspired with the Interior Department during the Bush era to persuade the tribe to accept a lower royalty than other government officials believed the tribe should be paid for coal on its land, costing the Navajo as much as $600 million in lost coal royalties. Justice Antonin Scalia was quoted as saying, "Today we hold once again that the tribe's claim for compensation fails. This matter should now be regarded as closed." Ending of quote. The case is United States v. Navajo Nation 07-1410. A jury found on Thursday that the University of Colorado had wrongfully dismissed tenured Professor Ward Churchill, but the jury, which deliberated for a day and a half, awarded only $1 in damages to the former professor, a tenured faculty member at the university's campus in Boulder since 1991, who had been chairman of the Ethnic Studies Department. The jurors found that Mr. Churchill's political views had been a substantial or motivating factor in his dismissal and that the university had not shown that he would have been dismissed anyway. On September the 12th, 2001, Churchill wrote an essay in which he argued that the United States had brought the terrorist attacks on itself. He said that some of those working in the World Trade Center on September 11 were not innocent bystanders, but formed a technocratic core at the very heart of America's global financial empire. He went on to describe the financial workers as little Eichmanns, a reference to Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi who had been called the architect of the Holocaust. The essay garnered little notice at the time, but gradually seeped through the internet, coming to light in 2005, and then creating an uproar. Whether Churchill gets his job back, and if so, when, was not resolved. Churchill's lawyers said that they would ask Judge Larry J. Navis of Denver District Court to order reinstatement in light of the verdict. A spokesman for the University of Colorado said administrators would oppose the request. ESPN is reporting that Sean Miller has had a change of heart and is taking the gig as head basketball coach at the University of Arizona after all. Yesterday he had said he was turning down the job and staying at Xavier. Obituaries over the weekend include one for Bud Shank, the essential figure in the West Coast jazz movement of the 50s and 60s. Bud first gained notice as a reed man in the post-war big bands of Stan Kenton and Charlie Barnett, then hooked up with guitarist Laurindo Almeida to help popularize the Brazilian bossa nova style in the United States. He was also an ace studio musician, the flute solo, on the Mamas and the Papas breakthrough hit single California Dreamin' in 1966, was a Bud Shank improvisation. Bud died at his Tucson home on Thursday of a lung ailment. He was 82 years old. And Steve Rayett has died. Bonnie's brother was a big part of the Minneapolis-St. Paul music scene in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Steve battled brain cancer for the last 8 years. He was 61. And Ken Anderson, the former defensive lineman for the NFL Chicago Bears during the 1999 season, has died at his home in Fayetteville, Arkansas, of a heart attack at only 33 years of age. A Canadian widow living in Cuba, whose fortune was trapped in a Boston bank by the U.S. trade embargo, died on Friday at the age of 108 without having ever gotten her money. Mary McCarthy died in her rundown Havana mansion after failing to get treatment for respiratory problems due to a shortage of cash, according to godson and heir Elio Garcia. McCarthy, born in St. John's, Newfoundland in 1900, had moved to Cuba in 1924, where she married her husband, a wealthy Havana-based Spanish businessman whom she had met at the Boston Opera. She soon became a member of Cuba's high society, co-founding the Havana Philharmonic Orchestra and an orphanage for boys. Her husband died in 1951, but she stayed in Cuba even after the 1959 revolution, when Fidel Castro took power and all of her neighbors in her wealthy neighborhood fled to the United States. She was not able to touch the money her husband had left her after the United States imposed a trade embargo against Cuba in 1962, and had lived in near poverty for decades. In 2007, after a Canadian diplomat intervened, the U.S. government allowed her to withdraw $96 a month from the bank in Boston. Garcia said McCarthy had to postpone treatment for respiratory problems when the United States did not transfer extra money allowed for medical purposes in time, and she died. She would have turned 109 on April the 27th. It's been over 62 years since Al Capone's obituary was published, but he's still managing to make it into the Chicago newspapers. Two such stories appeared last week. One was a piece in the Trib about his house going on the block. The six-room brick house is for sale with a $450,000 price tag, nearly double the asking price for similar homes in the neighborhood, and many times the $5,500 Capone paid in 1923 after moving there from Brooklyn, New York. 71-year-old Barbara Hogsett has owned the mob boss's former home since 1963 and wants to move to California to be with her son. And as it turns out, there really was an Al Capone vault after all, and Geraldo Rivera simply knocked down the wrong wall on that lousy 1986 TV special, the owner of the Mineola Hotel and Lounge in Fox Lake, Illinois, tore down a wall on Saturday and discovered a hidden bar once frequented by Al Capone. The Mineola was once a weekend hangout for the infamous mobster. Hotel owner Pete Jaxtus said that his father installed the wall 66 years ago and nobody knew what was hidden behind it. Jaxtus said a large room with two columns at either end and a mirror in excellent condition were what he found. Although no hidden treasure was found or mob secrets unearthed, Jaxtus says he may repair the bar to simply keep the memory of Capone alive and well. Okay. And the Chicago Ad Agency office that gave the world Snap, Crackle, and Pop and the Uncola is shutting its doors. J. Walter Thompson's Chicago employees learned Friday the company is closing their shop, once one of the city's biggest advertising agencies. JWT North America President Rosemary Ryan tells Crane's Chicago Business that the office has been struggling for 6 or 7 years. It started in 1891 when J. Walter Thompson's management sent a man to Chicago ahead of the 1893 World's Fair. In recent years, the office had lost several large clients, including Miller Brewing and Kraft Foods. Yesterday, I was startled, as were many of the other congregants at Water of Life Metropolitan Community Church here in Tucson, to hear our pastor, Reverend Dr. William H. Knight, request prayers for 128 prisoners in Iraq who are scheduled to be executed because of their homosexuality. After the service, I checked several online sources and found these details. Ali Healy of the London-based Iraq gay exile group Iraqi LGBT issued a statement last week claiming that at least one of the group's members was among 20 scheduled to be executed this week for the, quote, crime, end quote, of homosexuality, and that 128 people in all are scheduled to be executed by the Shiite government of Iraq in the near future. Iraqi LGBT was formed 4 years ago and has since been banned from operating in Iraq. Healy's statement was published on the British website UK Gay News. State Department spokesman John Fleming, the public affairs officer for the Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs in Washington, claims the report is bogus and that, quoting him now, homosexuality is not a crime in Iraq. Perhaps related, CNN is reporting that six gay men were shot dead by members of their tribe in two separate incidents in the past 10 days, according to an official with Iraq's Interior Ministry. In the most recent attack, two men were killed on Thursday in the Sadr city area of Baghdad after they were disowned by relatives. The shootings came after a tribal meeting was held and the members decided to go after the victims. On March 26, four additional men were fatally shot in Baghdad, the Interior Ministry official said, adding that the victims had also been disowned by their relatives. The official declined to be identified because he is not authorized to speak to the media. Witnesses told CNN that a Sadr City cafe, which was popular as a gathering spot for gays, was also set on fire. So much for John Fleming's denial. And of course, all of that was made possible by billions upon billions of your tax dollars, America, as well as the blood of many of your finest children. If you have any material that you'd like for me to include in the next few days, just email me at baronofarizona@gmail.com. Once again, the address, email, baronofarizona@gmail.com. And please do also indicate where you're listening to this podcast from. If you don't dig this news, you always have the option of making some news yourself. From the studios of KXCI Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie. Until tomorrow, have yourselves some peace and oranges.